You're listening to the station that takes you off the beaten track from the University of Victoria, CFUV, 101.9 FM, 104.3 on cable, and on the internet, cfuv.uvic.ca.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, and this is the inaugural edition of Guerrilla Radio for the new school year up here at UVic, and this is, for the newcomers here, program number 517. Well, as the Olympics draws nearer, nervous police intelligence operatives are nosing around, poking into the lives of citizens on the record as opposing the infamous five-ring circus. Evidently, uninvited police visits to law-abiding Canadians is not illegal. Otherwise, they wouldn't continue doing it despite the objections of civil rights organizations, right? Well, Zoe Blunt is a Victoria area-based environmental and rights defender, independent journalist, and one of the principals behind the website What the Fuck Langford, the closest watchdog of the ongoing Bear Mountain development, visible from Victoria as the Scabrous Scar in the heart of the Souk Hills. She and her colleagues are currently focused on the coming games and the attendant abuses of the ostensible tenets of Canadian society it demands. Zoe Blunt in the first half. And last November, millions across the United States believed the gathering gloom, the 8 years of ruinous rule the George Bush regime represented, was finally giving way to the sunrise of a new American era. The election of Barack Obama and the winning of control of both houses of Congress by the Democrats made the hope of that bright new future seem a slam dunk. But since taking office, the Obama administration has done little to validate the trust progressives put in it. David Swanson is an American political activist without peer. He's a former journalist, press secretary for one of Denis Kucinich's presidential runs, creator of numerous activist websites and campaigns, and the author of the recently released book, Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency and Forming a More Perfect Union. David Swanson and putting we the people back in the political driver's seat in America in the second half. And Victoria Street News publisher and CFUV radio broadcaster Janine Bancroft will join us at the bottom of the hour to keep us current with some of the goings-on from the streets of our fair city. But for Zoe Blunt, and talking about the biggest circus of corporate pimping, police harassment, wasted tax money, military exhibitionism, oh, and winter sports, the 2010 Olympics, and the torch relay slated to start here in Victoria, stick around. Welcome back to the program, Zoe.
Hey, thank you for having me, Chris.
Well, it's my great pleasure, of course, as always. Now, before addressing the Bear Mountain thing, which we're going to talk about at length here as well, but how does this Olympics and these the great despoilers of the Olympic game organizers, how do they work into our Bear Mountain situation here?
Oh, well, you know, they want to bring the torch relay up to Bear Mountain to do a victory lap around those native graves. And a lot of people don't realize that Victoria is actually going to see the first day of the Olympic Games is happening here in Victoria on October the 30th. That is day one of the Olympic torch relay. So they're having, it's this huge ceremony that they're doing. They're bringing over the flame in a lantern from Greece. They're flying it into the Inner Harbor. They're going to light the Canadian Olympic torch with that. And they're going to have a whole day of festivities and celebrations. And guess what? It's going to cost us $500,000 for one day.
Or a bargain at half the price.
I doubt it. When we think of what we could actually spend $500,000 on instead of a one-day festivities, you know, with the Olympic torch. And this is purely, you know, sponsored by Royal Bank. It's sponsored by Coca-Cola. These are very destructive companies. The Royal Bank sponsors the tar sands development in Alberta, which is incredibly destructive to the planet and to native rights and sovereignty, to human health, for all the cancers that are happening downstream. These are the guys who are organizing the Torch Relay. So it's going to be a festival of corporate advertising, and the rest of us are shut out. We don't get any voice. All we can do is we can wave Olympic flags and we can hold sponsor signs, but it looks like it's shaping up to be a real crackdown on free speech here in Victoria and everywhere else.
Well, is that $500,000 now? Is the Royal Bank going to pick up that $500,000, or does that fall in the City of Victoria's lap or the province, or?
That's all the combined cost. The City of Victoria has put up $150,000.
$150,000 for one day's.
Other municipalities are putting in a certain amount as well, and $5,000 or $10,000. Some of those are for private donations. We don't know how much the province and the federal government are putting in of our tax money. So it's a round figure, is $500,000. It could be much more than that. The original budget was over $1 million.
Well, can I be the ringleader's advocate here and say, well, hey, but this is going to put a spotlight on Victoria, a global spotlight that's going to help bring more and more hungry tourists here to bring all that money will be repaid fivefold, tenfold, a hundredfold.
For the investors, sure. World Bank will probably get more people investing with them. Yeah, it's the investors that make the money. It's not the little people. And as far as the tourism, it hasn't really been materializing in the current economic climate as much as they had predicted earlier.
Do they know that it doesn't snow in Victoria? Does anybody make them aware of that?
There's no winter sports here. I'm sorry. Go golfing.
Yeah. Up on Bear Mountain.
They get more snow than the rest of the rest of the South Island. They have a pretty bad climate up there.
I saw a comic, a newspaper editorial comic the other day, and it was two guys sitting on top of a big rubble over in the mainland there of what would be the ski jump or something like that, And the one guy says to the other, man, this is going to be great in February. And the other guy says to him, this is February. And there's like no snow, of course,
Yeah, it could be an El Nino year. So we're preparing for a big crackdown on free speech, though. And, people assume that Canada is a free speech zone. Mm. Here in Victoria, we're being told that by Philippe Lucas, the city councillor, that they will have protest areas for us to go to.
Oh.
And we've said, no, thank you.
Is this something that's been voted on by the Victoria City Council has made this decision? I've heard about this in Vancouver.
Right. Vancouver actually adopted bylaws to have broad enforcement powers, that there will be large areas of Vancouver that you won't even be able to put a sign in your window or bumper sticker on your car. The example that was used, the BC Civil Liberties Association, these are the lawyers who fight for our rights, and they are all over this. So they've written a letter to the municipalities, have asked them if they're going to uphold the charter. Victoria has not passed any bylaws, but I've read the guidelines from the Vancouver Olympic Organizing Committee, VANOC, and they're very explicit. There will be no propaganda, and that means by propaganda, they mean anything that furthers an idea. So whether it's, advertising, of course, is right off the board unless it's corporate sponsors advertising.
Well, unless VANOC and their overlords are getting a cut.
Right. They're going to purchase up all the outdoor advertising in Vancouver for the duration of the games. But it also means that people can't hold a sign that says Free Tibet, for example, or wave a Tibetan flag, or even have a t-shirt that says Free Tibet. You will be evicted from the venues. You will be removed from anywhere near the venues if you have any propaganda, is what they're calling it. But, of course, propaganda is what we call free speech.
Well, the International Olympic Organizing Committee now, they've done all VANOC's thinking for them in this, because this is par for the course anywhere the Olympics goes, right?
Right. It's the same as the Beijing Olympics in China last year. Mm-hmm. And people at that time thought it was, the Chinese are so repressive. No, it's because of the International Olympic Committee. They're there to protect this brand. The Olympics is the world's largest corporate brand.
Mm-hmm.
And they're there. The police, the military, the private security will be there to protect that brand. And if that means tearing signs out of teachers' hands and seniors' hands and social justice advocates' hands, they'll do that because that's their job while the Olympics are here. And since the Olympic torch is starting here in Victoria, we get to be day one of the 2010 Olympic Games at the end of October. Everybody's going to be watching us to see what happens.
Well, so what's going to happen, really?
We can't really see the future. We can tell you that, yes, well, we've reviewed these guidelines. It doesn't look good. What we're planning to do in response is we're hosting a grassroots community celebration. We are not calling it a protest. It's a grassroots community celebration on October 30th at Centennial Square.
It's Halloween Eve.
It is. It's Hell Night. Excuse me. but that happens to be the first day of the torch relay right here. So we're going to have our own five-ring circus. We're going to have our own games and competitions and, you know, shopping cart races and clowns on bikes. It's also Critical Mass Day because it's the last Friday in October.
It's Critical Mass, the great bicycle gathering for people trying to, you know, get through to the auto culture that there's something other.
Yeah, the people who are riding just for the joy of it and to make a political statement. So that's also happening in Centennial Square later that day.
Well, has somebody told Czech TV maybe there's going to be naked people? I mean, we can get some coverage.
Oh, that would be awesome. I hope the weather cooperates.
So naked bicyclists, you know, send a hint to Czech TV and A-News, and you get those A-reporters down there.
So we definitely expect, because it's Halloween, we expect, you know, zombies, pirates, superheroes, you know, clowns of all kinds.
And that's just the legislature.
what's happening on that day, on October 30th, they're planning to have a big celebration at the Ledge. We're going to have a zombie march. Our little celebration's probably going to go from about 2 p.m. to about 4:30 p.m. Then we will have a zombie march that probably will end up at the Ledge for the big concert there down in the Inner Harbor.
Who's performing? Do you know?
We don't know yet. It's a big secret. All this stuff is very secret.
Everything's behind closed doors.
Because of the security. And I mentioned the police and the military and
the
private security.
Oh, they're great. And they're doing a comeback tour, I understand.
No, it's not Sting.
Not those
police.
Guys?
It's the Mounties, the RCMP.
Well, they're doing a comeback, too. It's sort of back to the days of the frontier when their word was law.
Yeah, exactly. The Wild West. It's sort of back to the days of the communist witch hunts, actually.
We've seen ourselves regressing back to, I guess, the greatest Olympics of all times was that 1936 effort by Herr Hitler. And it seems we're going backwards in time in our own culture towards a more perfect union with the fascist past of the 20th century. What really makes me think of this is the tie-in here to the Bear Mountain and the Bear Mountain tree sit that you were a big part of. I guess it's coming up 2 years now, coming and turning of the year. And the response our law officials had back then, the way that they came in to break up that. Now, can we tie this in to a nice bow into Bear Mountain and what's going on today?
Sure, yeah. It's the objection, one of the main objections we have to the Olympics is that this is an unholy alliance between corporations and government to take away our rights and to take away our free speech. And we see that with the torch relay and how they're going to be using police and the army and private security to enforce those rules about no free speech unless it's celebratory signs and sponsor signs.
So you're free to praise people, but not to damn them.
So we're definitely promoting free speech, and we have a speaker series. So if any of the classes or departments or student groups would like to get in touch, we would be more than willing to come and speak to people in the university here about this unholy alliance between corporations and the government that's coming in the form of the Olympics. And people can contact us through no2010victoria.net. www.no2010victoria.net.
Well, I saw a guy upstairs. I was just upstairs in the pub there. We're at the Student Union Building of the University of Victoria. And on the back of his laptop, he had a sticker, No Olympics on Stolen Land. Yeah. Is this movement, is it picking up steam? Is it going more mainstream?
Yeah, and the more the government cuts services and cuts grants to students and artists, the angrier people are becoming. And the more they're spending on this debacle. And to illustrate the point of that about how governments and corporations are working hand in hand, we had the city of Langford that proposed to send the torch to Bear Mountain. As you mentioned, this is an extremely destructive development here in the South Island, about 20 kilometers from Victoria in Langford. We've been fighting this development since we first learned about the sacred caves and the native grave sites that were going to be destroyed. Mm-hmm. And many of those places have been destroyed in the last 2 years. You know, we had a 10-month-long tree sit protest. We tried to use the legal system to stop the interchange, but we couldn't because of the weak provincial environmental laws and because the interchange is supposed to be privately funded. So when we found out that they wanted to send the Olympic torch to Bear Mountain and bestow that, the endorsement of the world's biggest sporting event on Len Barry, who's recently been disgraced, of course, and they wanted to take that, the Olympic torch, and do a victory lap around those native graves on top of the mountain. And we said, no way. That is not going to fly. And I think, especially now with Len Barry, he's been exposed apparently for defrauding his own resort investors up there and using the money for God knows what, but partly to buy the Tampa Bay Hockey.
Well, this came out in the Times Colonist a couple weeks ago that, you know, I mean, Len Barry's a half owner or a part owner. I'm not sure if it's half and half, but he's got a partner that he hates. They hate each other.
Yes.
That much I know. And then it turns out that he's taken some of the investment money from his hockey pals that ponied up to be a part of this Bear Mountain extravaganza, and he used it for his own good to lever himself into the National Hockey League as an owner. I'm not sure how legal this is.
Well, I think he may be facing charges, actually. The last story I read said he was going to be, they're ordering a private investigation, and if the directors, the investors, find evidence of wrongdoing, which apparently they will, then he may well be charged. And what we're worried about, of course, Bear Mountain may be going bankrupt. Mm-hmm. And this could have a lot of collateral damage. It could hurt other people, including the city of Langford. We were fighting the interchange. We tried to fight it on environmental grounds. We tried to fight it on procedural grounds because the city actually loaned the developers the money to build the interchange.
Which wasn't repaid, apparently.
It has not been repaid, exactly. In March of this year, Len Barry was supposed to make a $5 million payment to the city of Langford for that interchange loan.
That's a lot of money for a little outfit like Langford. I mean, it's okay, guys, Stu, it's not Dog Patch. We'll stop calling it Dog Patch, but still $5 million is a lot of dough for a place the size of Dog Patch.
And now the city is trying to get the province and the federal government, our tax money, to bail out the interchange and to get the taxpayers to pay for it. And the reason we couldn't challenge it in the first place is because they told us it was privately funded. So they can't have it both ways.
Mm-hmm.
And we are going to hold these guys to account. There is going to be some accountability here because we are taking them to court. We have a judicial petition to challenge the next phase of the development on Skirt Mountain in Langford.
This is like the hundreds and hundreds of proposed condominiums with this Bahraini or Qatar sheikh or something like that. Is that the idea?
Well, it's next door to Bear Mountain. It's called the South Skirt Mountain Village, but it's all tied together by the interchange project. Interestingly enough.
Well, you got to have a way for your cars to get up and down, I suppose.
And that interchange took precedence over every other highway development on the South Island, including the Mackenzie Overpass, which has been needed for 10 to 15 years or more. And it just jumped the queue, and they said, "Well, it's private money. There's nothing you can do about it." So, they've really boxed themselves in, and we're going to see to it that they don't get the federal and provincial funding, that we don't throw any more taxpayer money at Len Barry, and that he doesn't get the Olympic torch either.
Well, if you just tune in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria, 104.3 on the cable, and cfuv.uvic.ca on the internet, everywhere else around the world. I'm speaking tonight with journalist extraordinaire Zoe Bunch. She's been kicking up dirt on this issue from the very beginning, as we mentioned a little earlier. And, you know, Zoe, in the early days when the tree sit was there, I went there, and it was a lovely little glade, and there was lots of wildlife, and you could go up, and there's a meadow up on the top, and these second-growth trees, and even some first-growth stuff. On the day that it got busted, and this, again, I want to stress the attitude here, but when the stormtroopers came in, and I don't think that's an exaggeration to say that, with these feller bunchers, which are these massive wood clearing or tree clearing machines, forest clearing machines, right behind them in tow, and they just came through, and then they just tore that whole place down in a matter of hours.
They cut down every tree. They brought in at least 60 special forces officers to clear.
These are guys with machine guns and dogs and bulletproof vests and for five hippies in the trees, right?
And now Langford is saying they're really not in a hurry to finish the interchange.
That's the rush.
They're not even being truthful about it now.
But doesn't it matter, because all they really want to do is just wipe it out and then, okay, well, now go ahead, you can protest, but now all the trees and everything that you said, the caves and the...
We're done protesting. Yeah. We're monkey wrenching it now. Ooh. And I mean that in the legal sense. We're monkey wrenching it by writing to the transportation minister and saying, look what they've done here.
Well, any of you commuters coming into Victoria, you'll see the great scab along the highway, that everything has stopped, of course, now, and they say, oh, well, that's okay, that was part of the plan. And anybody in Victoria, you go up to Mount Tommy and just cast your eyes westward, and you'll see the beautiful rolling Souk Hills, and then you'll see this big scabrous gap, and that is where the 40-story towers, condominium towers, were once destined to go. But are those going to happen?
No, maybe. It's stalled right now, and the word I heard was that the developer is pulling out of that. So, yeah, it's a house of cards. It's falling down. Langford City Council is nowhere to be found on this.
No.
They did not disclose that Bear Mountain missed the $5 million payment in March. They have not been truthful with the citizens. And so, you know, we're opening up a second front on this. We are going to go to the Auditor General. Mm-hmm. We are going to go to the Inspector of Municipalities and say, look, we've seem to have some wrongdoing here, not only on behalf on the part of Len Berry, who is defrauding his investors at Bear Mountain, but also on the part of Langford Council, mm-hmm. who signed this deal over the objections of their own voters and then failed to disclose when the deal went sour.
Yeah, there was a petition. How many signatures? Like,
well,
almost 2,000 or something?
They got enough to get it on the ballot for a referendum, but again, it was put. They said, no, you can't have a referendum because this is private money. Now they're trying to get the public funding. We're saying, no, yeah. You can't have it both ways. And it is illegal to give a cash gift to a private company. And if they get provincial and federal funding for that interchange, that is a gift to Len Berry. They may not do that.
Well, a little bit more Stu now. He was a real colorful guy, and I used to see him in the papers all the time, but I haven't heard a peep now. Is he in the Caribbean right now?
He's AWOL. Well, rumor is he's in Las Vegas.
He spends a lot of time there, apparently. Well, that's one gamble he took out here that he might regret in the future.
I know. Well, they really are. They're gambling with the budget out there. You know, they may have a $50 million shortfall this year.
Oh, man.
And I don't think municipalities are allowed to run negative budgets.
Well, in a small place like that, now, yes, they've increased the tax base quite a lot over the last 8-10 years that Stu has been around there, but can they pick that up?
So, of course, when the Olympic torch came, you know, when they started soliciting proposals, like, where should the torch go? You know, what sort of venues would you like to put forward? Then, yes, Langford Council put forward Bear Mountain as their venues, as their crown jewel. And like I said, I think we've wrecked any chance of that happening now. I think Len Berry has done a lot to wreck his chances of getting that particular award.
Well, you know, I mean, as much as I would like to gleefully dance about and especially all the ways these guys, and I mean, people might forget the goon squad construction guys that came down to harass protesters and some of the other dirty tricks that were going on out there, but it won't grow a single tree back on Bear Mountain. It won't restore a single wrecked sacred cave of First Nations burial sites or anything else. I mean, they've really made a bloody mess of that, and the only thing we can hope for is that these kinds of fly-by-night crooks aren't allowed to ruin the rest of the Sioux Hills.
Exactly, and there are still native sites and beautiful places on that mountain that should be preserved.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're doing is providing a salutary lesson to other municipalities if they're thinking about letting these developers jump the queue and put in developments that are not in the public interest, and if they're thinking that they could actually go along with that over the objections of their own voters, they should think twice. They should look at Langford and see what's happening there, because it's going to be quite ugly, I think, when it all unravels, and that's what's happening right now.
Well, like you said, this is a warning and a warning to all of us. I wish that more people in Victoria got involved at the early stages of this. That might have stopped all this. You know,
well,
we could have stopped it. And Langford, and you know, you guys, maybe some of you made some money while it was, you know, the going was good, but You've got the devil to pay now with what did you say, $50 million
they're
on the hook?
$50 million in the hole.
Oh, my God, you know. And then how on earth can a little municipality like that come up with that kind of scratch?
So we broke the story on What the Fuck Langford blog about the work stopping on the interchange. It's at wtflangford.blogspot.com, or people can just Google wtflangford. And so we broke that story, and now we're raising the alarm about the Olympic torch and about what's likely to hit people here in Victoria on October 30th and October 31st when the torch relay begins.
Well, Zoe, we're out of time this time, but you're going to have to come back before the October 30th thing comes up.
Definitely.
And then we'll talk about that, too, because here we go again, you know, like these guys, you're trampling over the rights that are supposed to be inherent to every Canadian citizen. They've done it in Vancouver. They're going to do it here. I mean, so when do we stop letting corporations and the money interests run all over the Constitution and the Charter of Rights and Freedoms of this country? I mean, does anybody care about this shit anymore? I mean, I really wonder.
Oh, yes. I think we're going to be very impressed with our little five-ring circus.
Well, Zoe Blunt, and one more time, the website for those who got computers?
We've got a couple of websites. The No 2010 Victoria website is no2010victoria.net, and we're at forestaction.ca. That's the Forest Action Network at forestaction.ca and What the Fuck Langford at wtflangford.blogspot.com.
And it's great stuff. And guess what? Hardly anybody else, as people wonder why these other media guys are going out of business. Well, they're kind of behind the curve. You guys are really taking the lead on this. Thanks a lot, Zoe Blunt, for coming on again.
Thank you, Chris.
Okay, I'm going to take a brief break, but when I come back, I'll be joined by Janine, so do stick around for that.
The CRTC is asking the public for comments as part of a nationwide review of campus and community radio. That review includes this station. We're asking that you let the CRTC know what local, nonprofit, volunteer-driven radio means to you and your community. Maybe you're a fan of community radio. Maybe you've donated. Or maybe you're a volunteer. Then please write to the CRTC and make sure you tell them you support the idea of stable funding for the sector. Submit your comments. Visit the website crtc.notlong.com and look for review number 418, the review of campus and community radio. The last day for comments is Friday, October 16th.
There you go, CRTC, and that's something that we should all be looking into. And I hear the college station is also imploring people to write to the CRTC to let them know how important campus community radio is to you. And this is, of course, what we're doing here at CFUV. And someone else that's been doing that at CFUV for an awful long time and has a show up here as well is Janine Bancroft. Hey, Janine, how's it going?
Well, Chris, you know, Zoe is just on top of things, as you say, and has been for many years. And she also organizes the Wild Earth that happens every year. She's a wonderful person. But there's one interesting thing about this torch relay that you guys did not discuss.
Oh, what's that?
And that's the fact that the torch itself began with the original Olympics in Greece. But the torch relay was Herr Hitler's idea. And he thought wouldn't it be dandy if they were to revitalize this torch, which hadn't been used apparently in Olympics for quite some time. But in 1936, he thought, let's revive this thing and then run it through all the nations that I intend to conquer.
Yes.
Well, Zoe's still with us here, Zoe. What about that? What about the connection between the big shows of old and what we have now?
Well, absolutely. It's the same kind of nationalism as we saw in Hitler's Germany. It's pure nationalism. If you look at the torch route, they're actually going to fly it 1,000 miles up to the very tip of Canada, up by Greenland, just to establish that sovereignty. It's very similar. They're very concerned about promoting Canada as a brand and establishing sovereignty. And national, promoting nationalism.
Well, so okay, Janine.
Okay, so thank you for organizing all that, Zoe, and I'm looking forward to October 30th for sure.
Yeah.
And moving on, Chris, can we talk a little bit about the flu and the vaccination?
I don't know if we have to, man. I mean, between you and me, and I don't know if Zoe's getting this as well. Holy smokes!
Don't get it, folks. It's not fun. But this vaccination is just deadly. I was looking at this really great website, pacificfreepress.com.
Oh,
you know?
I heard of that.
Yeah, it's a good one. And there's a really good article that talks about how all the ingredients in the vaccination, there's a lot of mercury, which I've been trying to detox for years, the mercury in my system. Animal tissues and fluids, horse blood, rabbit brain, dog kidney, monkey kidney, chick embryo, chicken egg, duck egg, pig blood, and pig protein and tissue.
No, I have newt. I have newt and toe of frog. And
yeah, no, this is for 21st century, Chris. Come on, get with it. Calf serum and fetal bovine serum. There's formaldehyde. Woohoo! And MSG. You always need a little MSG in your vaccination.
That's because if your vaccination, you know, an hour later, you're going to feel like you need another vaccination.
Well, then there's some antifreeze, just in case you're in the cold climates, I guess, can't get up in the morning. And what else? Oh, some washed sheep red blood cells. It's good that they're washed anyways. They're clean. And then there's these Vero cells, which would interest you because it's a continuous line of monkey kidney cells linked to the SV40 virus, which is known to cause leukemia. So, you know, I'm looking forward to the day they break down my door and force this vaccination into me. I'd rather be sick. I'd rather just go through it and develop my own immunity. Thank you very much.
Well, yeah, it's pretty scary. And I've often wondered why, you know, what do you need mercury for and all this stuff? I mean, I don't know what it does. I guess we'll have to get a doctor on and talk about that.
Well, you know, if we're all dead, then we can't make so much noise. We're just pesky, and we need to all be dead, I think, is sometimes is what's going on. So I really recommend people to take good care of yourself. And the VHA head guy, what's his name, Mr. Perry, I believe it is, and he suggests a couple of interesting things. He says stay home for 7 days, which I've been trying to stay away from people myself, personally. And he also suggests to set up a buddy system so that when, you know, you can phone and say, okay, I'm sick, can you bring me supplies, right? And so that you've got someone to run the vitamin C and the orange juice and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And just prepare for it. I think that would be, we're not supposed to give health advice, by the way, on our little community radio station. So that's certainly not what we're doing. But I'm just saying that I got through it, and it was because of, well, almost through it, but I just hope that other people can get through it too.
Well, and then there's always the issue of work, you know. I mean, a lot of people, if they're sick, they don't get paid, you know, and then there's, you know, their coworkers have to pick up the slack, and there's pressures on them there to, you know, to come into work whether they're healthy or 100% or not, and you know, it's not such an easy thing.
It's not. That's right. And, well, you know, you got the head of VHA saying 7 days, stay away for 7 days. So I don't know. And certainly, yeah, health ought to be more of a priority. So speaking of health, Ben, I just have a couple of announcements from Gaia College.
Okay.
They do a certificate course in ecological landscape design. So this is a way of creating healthy and vibrant, ecologically sound landscapes. So you don't have to dump a lot of chemicals on a lawn, for example. And there's a couple of free information sessions Wednesday, the 16th, and Thursday. That's just Wednesday and Thursday. Wednesday, it's at 7 at Fairfield Community Center. Thursday, it's at 7 at Royal Roads. And then also on Thursday, in Fairfield, a local person is organizing a community gardening forum, and she's just trying to get people together who are interested to know about community gardens in Victoria and what kind of initiatives have been made towards community gardens in Fairfield, and just a way to kind of a lot of questions to ask of all of our elected officials, I think, for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, all right, Janine. Well, that's about all we have, but you've got the Street News, Victoria Street News newspaper is out on the street for September, and your program every alternating Thursday, 11 a.m., Winds of Change, right here at CFUV.
This is correct, yes. Thank you. As long as I don't die before any of that happens.
Well, you and me both. And I'll repeat the Gaia College presentations. There's two of them coming up that gives people a chance to you know, get their hands in the dirt and you know, cause say, you know, grow your own before somebody paves over what's left of the farmland down here on the Lower Island. You know, we might have to grow all our own.
We might have to. GaiaCollege.ca.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Janine.
Thank you, Chris.
Bye-bye. I'll be back after a break with David Swanson.
Yeah!
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio, CFUV 101.9 FM, 104.3 on the cable dial. And, you know, we're heard around the world at cfuv.uvic.ca. Well, the election of Barack Obama and the winning of control of both houses of Congress by the Democrats made the hope of a bright new future seem a slam dunk. But since taking office, the Obama administration has done little to validate the trust progressives put in it. David Swanson is an American political activist without peer. He's a former journalist, press secretary for one of Dennis Kucinich's presidential runs. He's the creator of numerous activist websites and campaigns, and he's the author of the recently released book, Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency and Forming a More Perfect Union. Welcome back to the program, David.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Well, it's good to have you again. You know, and I almost said George Bush in there. It's so reflexive after all of these years that there's a book title that doesn't have George Bush's name in it. But I mean, but David, there were, before Barack Obama was elected, there were many worrying warning signs that belying the kind of changes in U.S. policies at home and abroad Obama supporters hoped his administration's ascension would represent. But after nearly 10 months in office, is it time now, David, to surrender hope in Obama?
It was always time not to place hope in a president or an election. I mean, it's an absolute predictable stupidity that people put so much expectation on an election and on an election of a president, both of which are misguided and destined to lead to excessive excitement followed by excessive disappointment. And the latter choice, to put so much emphasis on a president, is not just misguided, it's destructive, because I, for one, would not want a president to have the power to do the things that people expected of this one. Another one could simply undo them, and were this president to do them, it would simply be a matter of chance. We have no way of influencing a president in between elections, and we have so little choice of candidates during elections. We have to get active the day an election ends. That's when our main job begins, regardless of who we elected, and especially if we elected somebody better who we think might do better. That's the time to get active, not the time to sit back. And the place to get active fundamentally, primarily, is the first branch of our government, the Congress, where we have a chance of making our voices heard and where our laws are supposed to be made.
Yeah, well, okay, in the United States, you've got these checks and balances, right? You've got the Congress, you've got the Senate, and the presidency and the judiciary. So, I mean, it's not like one president is theoretically going to run away with everything, even if he's as popular as Barack Obama. But the Democrats have the Senate, they've got the Congress, they've got the presidency. Okay, the Supreme Court is another matter, but I mean, is it unrealistic for people to have expected that, okay, now we've got we've got all of our cylinders running in one direction? Is it still Pollyannish to think that there's going to be some real change here, just given without the people having to stand outside the White House with placards?
Well, that's a much more meaningful question when you bring Congress into it, because that's where things are supposed to happen. And we do have this system completely dominated by parties. Two parties, exclusive of any others, and one party for decades now purporting to represent the people against the wealthy interests. And that party, as you say, has been given huge majorities in the House, in the Senate, and the White House. It does make perfect sense for people to begin to ask, well, what are we going to get for this? We've been told how many tens of thousands of times in fundraising emails over recent years, let us get 60 senators and then there will be peace and joy and harmony and prosperity. And they have it. They have 60 senators. Okay, they have to replace Senator Kennedy, but they have reached that mark. They have a huge majority in the House. That being said, there is never an appropriate time for the American people to sit back and say, okay, go to it. There is never a time to think, oh, geez, do we have to get out in the streets and fight for it? Of course we do. We always do. We always will. If an election changed that, elections would be illegal. But it does make sense that people begin to ask, we've given the Democratic Party everything, and they're choosing to do nothing with it. What do we do next?
Yeah, but isn't that...
And how we respond to that is going to decide everything.
But isn't that what government's for? I mean, so that they do it so I don't have to? I mean, I work 40, 50 hours a week. I only get 2 weeks off a year if I'm one of the lucky ones. You know, come on. I mean, I voted for this guy so that he said he was going to do something that I thought I liked. Okay, now go and do it. Now I can go back and pay them, you know, work to pay my mortgage. Is that unreasonable?
No, absolutely not. It is extremely unreasonable, but it is understandable. I mean, we do have a chicken and an egg problem here because people are overworked, people are overtired and overstressed and misled by our corporate media so that they have to go out of their way just to inform themselves. On the other hand, we have a responsibility as citizens in a representative republic to do what it takes to maintain that republic, which is a full-time job. It's something that our ancestors fought and died over and struggled over and suffered for and have managed to maintain at least in some remnant for these many years. We have a responsibility to keep this republic alive, and that requires being far more active than just voting in an election or going out and registering people to vote in an election, which is busy work, not activism. It's busy work imposed on us by the failure of the government to simply register everybody when they're 18. Our job begins the day after the election, and that's not because we elected somebody we didn't like or somebody who falls short or somebody we fail to respect. It is the respectful thing to do. To give every ounce of energy we've got to get out there and tell them how to represent us, as Barack Obama himself asks us to do.
Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria, 104.3 on the cable, and CFUV.uvic.ca across the world in the internet, on the internet rather, in Shoutcast. I'm speaking tonight with David Swanson, and David is a hyper-activist, I'll say, David, a former journalist, press secretary for one of Denis Kucinich's presidential runs. He's the creator of numerous activist websites and campaigns, and the author of the recently released book, Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency and Forming a More Perfect Union. I'm looking at one of David's websites right here, DavidSwanson.org, which would be a very good place for you to start if you're computer capable. Well, David, last night I watched a James Bond rerun on television, and it was the one with Price as a sort of Fox News kind of guy. He was the main heavy villain. Well, we don't get Fox News up here unless we've got satellite dishes in Canada. We don't allow hate speech. The stuff like Glenn Beck and that, calling on people to assassinate people, he'd be in jail if he did that stuff up here. But what the hell's going on down there with these guys with machine guns coming to meetings, and now the million mob march in D.C. that fell somewhat short of its ambitions? You know, what's going on, and why is Fox allowed to get away with this?
Well, not much is going on, and I don't think we owe these people much respect or power or necessarily the compliment of talking about them.
Really?
I mean, we have marches with more people all the time for peace and justice and smart, generous, sophisticated proposals that get absolutely zero attention. The fact that the corporate media pays attention to these people and encourages them and condones them and treats them as one side of a two-sided debate when they are a small minority of wackos tells you much more about the U.S. corporate media than it does about the United States of America. Sadly, that media is very influential, and there is a self-fulfilling effect there, where more people begin to consider something acceptable when they've seen it 10,000 times. But these people are a minority. Their representatives have been completely voted out of power, as we would notice if the Democrats chose to use the power they have. And it is disturbing, and it needs to be addressed. But it doesn't need to be given the respect that U.S. corporate television networks give it.
So we're trapped in this echo chamber thinking that these guys have more influence than they do. I mean, the fact that 60, 70,000 was the estimate I heard people showed up for the Glenn Beck march really does speak to the limited influence these windbags have when it comes to people actually putting leather on the pavement and getting out for things. On your most recent post at your own website at davidswanson.org, 12 Twisted Truths, you know, and you know, one of the biggest things about about your new president that bothers me, and especially coming from somebody who's a lawyer, is this idea that, oh, we can't look backwards. You know, like, well, every criminal that stands before a judge would love to hear that from the judge. Oh, well, let's not look back. Let's look forward at the future. Well, what about that now? Is there any addressing, is there any hope of addressing or any amount of public pressure put on the White House and the Congress that can open up some of the crimes that have led to this sorry state that the American polity is in today?
Absolutely. I mean, there was a science fiction movie, I think, with Tom Cruise, where they managed to see future crimes and prosecute crimes that hadn't occurred yet, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe that's what Barack Obama has in mind. Otherwise, as you say, crimes are in the past. And if we are going to move into a future where we deter crimes, it's going to be by prosecuting crimes which, as we've noted, are in the past. I mean, there's no way around the fact that this is absolute nonsense and other things I shouldn't say on the air. There are all kinds of ways that we can make prosecutions of some of these crimes happen, including torture, but not limited to torture. We have warrantless spying. We have aggressive war. We have illegal propaganda. We have political prosecutions. We have a huge, extensive array of crimes. And there are civil suits that are moving forward with encouraging rulings. There are strategies for state and local prosecutions. At the federal level, there's a prosecution potentially opened. There's a preliminary investigation into whether to prosecute certain bad apples while declaring immunity for the higher-ups, the lawyers and the presidents and vice presidents and cabinet secretaries, so that we really are openly now expressing this idea that we have a class of citizens under the law and a class above the law. But there are prosecutions getting underway in Spain of six of the top lawyers and officials, the second tier, just below the president and vice president, who put together these torture policies. That is extremely helpful. We in this country are going to be enormously grateful to the people of Spain, and would be to the people of Canada if they saw fit to take similar action. The United States prosecutes foreign criminals for crimes against humanity that don't occur in the United States under universal jurisdiction. Canada has the right under universal jurisdiction to prosecute Americans, and it's not as if Canada has not been impacted. So I would encourage prosecutors with some nerve and some decency to take it up and not be scared off it.
Oh, well, I mean, in Canada, we've got visits coming up, and it won't be the first. George Bush is up here in town, and Dick Cheney is fishing not far from where I'm talking from right now as well. It doesn't seem to matter in this country. I mean, the authorities here are so closely tied to the United States. I mean, we have the child soldier Omar Khadr, who is rotting away in Guantanamo after having already spent more than a third of his young life in Guantanamo Bay Prison at Camp X-Ray there, and the government of this country won't even ask the United States to release him. You know, even though he was taken prisoner, badly wounded and tortured while wounded, all in variation to the Geneva Conventions, when he was only 15 years old, a child soldier by international statute, and should have been released long ago, but they won't even ask for it. So, I mean, I don't hold much hope of Canada moving on that direction, David.
Well, I can't say too much good about Canada's government, but I can't say much at all good about my own. But there are people in Canada, including activist groups of lawyers and mm-hmm. scholars, who are not just protesting these American criminals every time they come, but formally requesting that they be arrested and tried for their crimes, and pushing strategies to try to compel that. And I applaud those actions.
Yeah, Lawyers Against the War, LAW.
By good Canadians.
Yeah. LAW is Lawyers Against the War, and they've made motions, and they've been duly ignored. And some of the activists have actually been beaten up by police and arrested and face charges now for trying to do the job that the police should be doing in this country. But sadly, you know, as I say, it's not going to happen anytime soon.
Well, it may or may not, but these officials are already afraid to travel to a great many countries. It would be useful to get Canada added to that list, where they are at least scared enough not to go there. And I think that that is possible in the foreseeable future, and we should be pressing for it. But we have the same sort of backlash and crackdown in this country on our rights to speak and to assemble, and freedom of press. I mean, a couple of days ago, friends of mine, hundreds of people were protesting at the Army Experience Center, which was a video game arcade with real weapons and tanks set up in a shopping mall to teach little kids that it's fun to kill and die for the U.S. Army. And this place has been regularly protested. Six activists out of hundreds went to jail overnight, over the weekend. And they went and picked a journalist out of a crowd based on her camera, and she looked like a professional journalist, and locked her up as well, preemptively, to prevent news coverage. And this is not unusual now in this country. But the Army has announced that they're closing the place down, and they're not going to build new ones in additional shopping malls. And the Army is claiming that that's because they've got enough recruits; they don't really need any more. The lagging economy is helping them out enough, which is blatant nonsense. They're spending millions and millions on recruitment and never get enough of it. But the protests shut the place down.
Well, David, I mentioned that you've set up a lot of websites, and one of those, of course, is afterdowningstreet.org, which was in direct reference to a memo that captured the words and thoughts of George W. Bush and Tony Blair, the then Prime Minister of the UK, and talking about how they were going to gin up the intelligence and the information on Iraq to make sure that this war happened. Well, if we can go into the Wayback Machine, I mean, do you see, is it possible to unwind these wars through the courts using evidence like the Downing Street memos and others to give America a way to save face and pull out of Iraq and Afghanistan?
Well, the International Criminal Court may this year have on its agenda the ability to prosecute the supreme international crime of aggressive war. If it does, going forward, there is no more glaring example that has done more damage to international law than the U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003, which ought to be taken up. It's conceivable that that could happen. In the meantime, for Spain and potentially other countries to be prosecuting individuals for some of the war crimes is an appropriate step in the right direction. We in this country, you know, should be fighting to ratify the International Criminal Court and join international treaties and get on the side of international law as we were 50 years ago, rather than being the leading force in its dismantling. But we have to stop the crimes first. We have to get out of Afghanistan and Pakistan and Iraq and not go into Iran. If we're going to begin addressing these things as crimes, we have to at least stop committing them. And, you know, there are state and local initiatives underway to prosecute Bush and others in the United States for the war itself that may go forward. But all of them are a long shot. And I'm encouraged a little bit by the fact that the peace movement, which largely just closed shop as soon as Obama was elected, is beginning to show some signs of life. And in early October, when we reach 8 years in Afghanistan, there are going to be protests and civil resistance and activism in the United States against the wars. And there are even some signs of life in Congress that they might take up their responsibility and end these things.
Well, yeah, when you say we don't want to see one administration continuing the crimes of the next, I mean, then it seems like there's no way that it's going to prosecute or even address past discretions. I mean, today is the deadline to renew the Trading with the Enemy Act. This is ostensibly the piece of legislation that allows the embargo of Cuba to continue. I've been at work all day, so have they voted on this today? Do you know, David?
I do not know. I haven't heard anything. I can Google it, but I imagine if things had gone surprisingly well, I would have heard. Mm-hmm. So maybe I'm just being a pessimist. But.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just see Obama following exactly this, the same well-worn path that's been laid out as far as Afghanistan goes, and using the same financial advisors in the whole bailout fiasco. And I mean, it's, you know, people call it George Bush's third term, but I mean, is it time to give up on politics altogether and maybe just revolution?
Absolutely not. I mean, if revolution is just a crazy word for nonviolent resistance and citizen activism that is appropriate always at all times and in all places, and is perhaps more badly needed now than at other times, then sure, we need revolution. But if revolution means anything like revolution, I'm not just unclear what good that would possibly do us, but I'm a little wary of encouraging the nutso minority that is threatening assassinations that we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. Again, to expect that electing a president is going to change anything, it's just crazy. To get disappointed about those crazy expectations is appropriate, but then the question is, where do we go next? From there, do we say, well, the Democratic Party is hopeless, let's switch back to the Republican Party? Or do we say, let's build a third party? Or do we say, let's crawl under our beds? Or do we say, let's join the nutcases and get our guns and start shooting up restaurants? Or do we decide that we're mistaken to be taking our orders from a party rather than giving orders as citizens and the proper sovereigns of the country to our representatives, regardless of party, taking our demands uncensored, uncompromised for peace and justice to our representatives and putting our demands on them rather than this reversal of the democratic process that we have now where all these activist groups go and ask the Congress members of one party or the other, what should people rally for and demand of you, and then go tell the activists what to rally for so that the people are turned into props in a whole charade. If we drop that and become independent, especially of parties, and begin pushing courageously and strategically, and not just with little notes that say, please, if you wouldn't mind, don't pass this next genocidal bill, but put ourselves in harm's way, shut down their offices by camping out in them, risking going to jail and going to jail, building the media we need to build and using good media outlets like this one. A lot harder things have been done in human history than the task that is in front of us. It's completely doable.
Well, okay, David Swanson, then I'll get over my Obama hope hangover and get on with the work at hand. David Swanson, check him out, davidswanson.org. And you can also find David's new book, Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency and Forming a More Perfect Union. Thanks a lot for all your work, David, and it's always good to talk to you.
Thanks for everything you do all year long. I appreciate it.
Okay, until the next time then, David. And I also want to thank Janine Bancroft and Zoe Blunt for being here. And I want to remind you guys again, as I promised I would, that Gaia's 5th Annual Certificate Course in Ecological Landscape Design. You can learn more about it. Go to the Fairfield Community Center this Wednesday, September 16th at 7 p.m. And there's a free information session Thursday, September 17th at Royal Roads on being an organic master gardener course. Again, through Gaia College and Soul, that's S-O-U-L. Check those out. Thanks to everyone at the station for putting this on. It's a brand new busy year up here at the University of Victoria. Wow, I've never seen so many people. And I want to remind you, especially jazz fans, stick around because Arnold's coming straight up with rhythming to rhythming you into this late summer evening here in beautiful Victoria. Until the next time. Yeah, very odd, swear there, in the 21st century.